Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, home economics for the 21st century. Yes, it's not just baking cookies anymore, and it's not just for girls. A viewer's guide to watching the American team in the World Cup soccer tournament, which begins in a few days. The minimalists, people who get rid of most of their possessions to live as simply as they can. It's a small but growing movement. And Rangel and Esbayat exchange accusations in their first televised debate.
He wants to be the Jackie Robinson of the Dominicans in the Congress, which is ambitious.
It's not about one community against each other. And you trying to frame the debate in this fashion is a disservice to your constituency.
More Rangel versus Esbayat coming up. But first, the latest twist in the Bo Bergdahl prisoner exchange is Secretary of State John Kerry basically threatening to kill the five released detainees if they go to war again against the United States on the battlefield. But there is a deeper question, as the media can't take their eyes off the more obvious questions, a fundamental one raised by the swap about the Guantanamo Bay prison and how the United States treats detainees in the war on terror. And we'll play that Kerry clip from CNN yesterday in a John McCain response. But after a decade of arguing whether Gitmo detainees are terrorists to be dealt with in military tribunals or criminals to be dealt with in civilian courtrooms, this prisoner exchange treated the five Taliban fighters involved like regular prisoners of war, a status that both the Bush and Obama administrations have studiously avoided. So what does this mean for the future of war and terrorism and the American system of justice? Let's talk about this prisoner swap issue that is not getting enough attention with Karen Greenberg, director of the Center for National Security at the Fordham University Law School. Hi, Karen. Welcome back to WNYC. Karen Greenberg, can you hear me? All right. Either she can't hear me or we can't hear her.
I can.
Karen, you got me now? Karen, can you hear me? It's Brian. Karen? Not yet. All right, listeners, we're going to open up the phones while we try to straighten out the technical difficulties. And I think this will just take a few seconds. But call in right now. If you heard John Kerry on CNN yesterday, for one thing, threatening to kill these guys if they cause us any trouble on the battlefield. And secondly, with your reactions, as this is now over a week old, do you think that the Obama administration did the right thing? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I'll tell you what, while you're trying to fix the problem to Karen's line, can we play the John Kerry clip? Do we have John Kerry speaking on CNN yesterday about what would happen to these detainees if they do, in fact, as people fear and predict, go back to war? Here he is.
To leave an American behind in the hands of people who would torture him, cut off his head, do any number of things, and we would consciously choose to do that, that's the other side of this equation. I don't think anybody would think that is the appropriate thing to do. You know, it seems to me we have an ability, we know we have the ability, to be able to deal with people who want to threaten Americans or threaten the United States. And if that's what they go back on their word to do, or if the Qataris don't enforce what they've done, we have any number of avenues available to us to be able to deal with that.
All right, leaving.
Hey, Brian, can you hear me?
Karen, you there?
I'm here.
Yay, we did it. Yes.
Hey.
Can you hear me? All right, Karen Greenberg, now with us. Director of the Center for National Security at Fordham University. So, Karen, these five Taliban fighters exchanged for Bo Bergdahl, did the Obama administration label them as one thing or another in this exchange?
Well, that's an excellent lead question, because they basically did a prisoner of war swap, correct?
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because we haven't classified these people as prisoners of war. We've been careful to keep them as enemy combatants or a version of enemy combatants. And so it raises much larger questions, as you're suggesting. But I think they've backed away from giving them any kind of official or formal label and just transferred them and left us to put together the pieces of what it all means.
And as an expert and an advocate on the laws of war, Does that matter to you that they traded these five guys without defining them as one thing or another, but treating them as if they were prisoners of war in the ordinary sense?
No, I think it's I'm very clearly on the side of backing the president on this, and however he did it, to begin to make some sense out of Guantanamo and to begin to pull the wool away from our eyes on so much of what's obscured about these prisoners. So I don't really care. For the most part, many of these labels have been used just to justify one kind of presidential action or another. So to have it happened for purposes that have to do with A, getting a U.S. soldier back, and B, emptying Guantanamo in some real ways is fine.
I've seen it argued that the war in Afghanistan is ending. At least the United States is, you know, pulling its troops out and is ceasing to be a combatant in that war. And at the end of a war, you exchange prisoners with the other side, and that's normal. Is that your position at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think that eventually the clock was ticking on this one, that when the authorization for the use of military force that covered Afghanistan arguably wound down with the withdrawal of U.S. troops, then the prisoners, particularly the Afghan prisoners, would have to be let go anyway. We don't know when that would have been, though, because 2014 is the original date, and now it's been extended in some ways to 2016. So, yes, I mean, I think that argument holds, but I'm not sure exactly what the timetable would have been.
There is an argument on the other side, though, that says the Taliban war isn't really ending. The U.S. is just deciding not to contribute any more troops. Look what just happened, this Taliban airport attack in Karachi in the last day, killing more than two dozen people, they say. That's the war we're allowing these five prisoners to go back to, isn't it?
It is. And to the point, you know, the underlying point of what you're saying is, you know, what kind of danger are we putting ourselves in? Are we, the United States, putting ourselves in by letting these individuals go back to an increasingly war-torn, it looks like, situation? And the answer to that is basically what I think, you know, you and I have talked about many times, which is that, first of all, they've been in custody for 12 years. Second of all, we don't know what shape they're in. There are many politicians saying that they'll return to battle by tonight. We don't know what that means, but here's what we do know. We know that the American people have, for the most part, allowed their presidents, two presidents now, to pour trillions of dollars into making us safer, in terms, and both domestically and worldwide, and in the way those things are intertwined. So if we let them go and they start to do something that harms the United States, then it's our job to be able to preempt that or fight back or whatever it is. But one of the things about these particular prisoners is there's a lot of details that have been provided about what they allegedly did in terms of their prior attacks before they were captured, not on Americans but on others, in terms of their position within the Taliban, positions of power that they had. It raises the question, why couldn't we, if we can't try these individuals, who can we try from Guantanamo? Because one of the things, if we weren't going to let them go, would have been to try them. And we don't know that these people ever would have been tried. There's no indications of that. So that's kind of an interesting, piece of this that we can't lose sight of as well.
But do you have any sympathy for the U.S. government on this question of trials when they've been caught in this conundrum in which they say many of them, and I don't know if these five Taliban detainees were in this category, but many of them they can't put on trial and convict because they just don't have the evidence. Either there never was the material evidence to actually convict them of something, or so much evidence would be thrown out because of the Bush administration interrogation techniques that the courts see as torture, that there wouldn't be enough admissible evidence. And yet the government of the United States sees them as too dangerous, as too committed to future terrorist attacks on the United States. So they can't convict them in a court of law, but they don't feel it's responsible to release them if they think they're releasing them into a life of attacking Americans. That's a real conundrum, isn't it?
You asked me if I have sympathy for it. Yes, I have sympathy for how difficult it is and how much tremendous leadership it would have taken and will take to release those people if, in fact, they do it. One of the interesting things about what the Obama administration has done over the past few months is to whittle away at that list of people that you just referred to who in prior days have been considered too dangerous to release or there's not enough evidence on them or both. And a handful of them have now been released as their cases have been reconsidered. So I do have sympathy for it. I don't have sympathy for the idea that we have a category now of indefinite detention. It's a dangerous road to have gone down, and you're not sure where it's going to lead. One of the things about this prisoner exchange is that the president has taken a very bold step in terms of placing his trust in the American military and intelligence forces to be able to, whether or not, you know, however they disappear if they leave Qatar after a year into Afghanistan, to be able to keep us safe despite the fact that they're out there. I think that's a very important move right now, because if you listen to the people on TV and you read the news, you see a lot of talk about how dangerous these people are. And it's been a recurrent theme since the day that the first detainees came to Guantanamo, when the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said, you need to bind them and gag them because they will bite through the hydraulic lines on the plane. What? These are human beings and individuals with human powers and no more. And I think the president is trying to send a message to the country, A, these are people who have been in custody for 12 years and we're not as afraid of them as some of people say we should be, and B, which is related to that, we can keep ourselves safe.
They'll hide hydraulic line cutters in their shoes. Karen Greenberg, the director of the Center for National Security at Fordham University, as we talk about the developments in the Bo Bergdahl prisoner exchange and some of the underlying fundamental issues they raise about detainee status, indefinite detention without trial, Guantanamo Bay. We'll get back into Kerry's apparent threat to kill these people. We'll actually replay that clip in a minute because I know we just used it to fill time earlier, and a lot of you probably didn't quite get the context. This Karachi attack by Taliban at the airport in Karachi in the last day. And I think Zach in Princeton wants to comment on that. Zach, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian, and good morning to your guest. I'm a first-generation American. I was born in Karachi. And as I was telling the producer, that the attack on the Karachi airport is basically the chickens coming home to roost. Taliban and their offshoots are the creations of Pakistan military and, of course, CIA-sponsored. And since the dog has gotten out of the control of its master, it's biting its hand. And it's just a shame that the geopolitics of this is affecting Pakistan now. And I personally don't see any kind of a sea change in terms of this problem going away. It will only keep on getting worse and worse, in line of what the Sri Lankans did against the Tamil rebels. That sort of tactic is what my assessment is what is needed to cull this problem, and that's something that neither the United States nor, and certainly not the Pakistani military or its polity, have the...
What would that be? What is that model you're holding up as positive?
I'm not holding it as positive. It's a no-win situation. What the Sri Lankans did was just tantamount to ethnic cleansing, and
right.
That's not what I'm advocating.
Right.
I'm just trying
I
to...
I see. That's the only thing that might be effective, but it's unconscionable.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what about the U.S. withdrawal from the region? Do you see that as having any measurable effect one way or the other on either the power or the will of the Taliban to keep up this kind of fight in Afghanistan and Pakistan?
To paraphrase, and this is almost 12 years ago, what Donald Rumsfeld said regarding the Taliban that they are a formidable and a resilient enemy, and they very much are, because they are driven by a higher calling, an ideology which is out of this world, literally, from a religious perspective. And to that end, they will do anything in order to achieve their particular goals. And it all boils down to one thing. It's a game of power. It has nothing to do with religiosity. It has absolutely nothing to do with trying to make the lives better of whether it's the Pakistanis or the Afghans. It is all about their power, their thoughts, mm-hmm. and it just comes down to it's really gang war.
Zach, and I'm going to leave it there. Thank you for all your thoughts on this. And Karen Greenberg, it's an interesting tension that he raises between religiosity, a real fanatic religiosity on the part of the Taliban. And we remember they first came to public attention in the United States just before 9/11, when Taliban leaders in charge of Afghanistan were destroying those Buddhist statues.
Correct.
And Americans were horrified. Mm-hmm. And it was such an act of kind of extreme Islamist fundamentalism, as well as probably an act of intimidation and power in that context. Now we have two different tracks going, I think, or at least two different tracks. One where the Taliban in Afghanistan is trying to regularize itself as a political force, including with this prisoner exchange of Bo Bergdahl, trying to look like a legitimate political party that's, you know, giving up a prisoner for some prisoners, doing it in a regular kind of, you know, lawful and with relations with the other side kind of fashion. And then you get this thing in the Karachi airport today.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've just put your finger on something very important, which is they're acting like state actors. And this exchange solidified that in a very powerful way that could have long-term consequences, especially in terms of how they project their image to their own people as well as to the rest of the world. I think the other issue of religiosity that you mentioned is that in the American mind, the Taliban and al-Qaeda have been associated, and for good reason, because of 9/11. But in essence, they are actually different. And in terms of the religious attempt to build a caliphate.
And remember, I just want to jump in here for people who, you know, for whom this is ancient history or didn't even start following this story until years after 9/11. The reason that the United States went to war in Afghanistan was that the Taliban was sheltering Osama bin Laden and the other al-Qaeda leaders and would not give them up after the 9/11 attacks. And if they weren't going to do that, that was the basis on which the United States said, well, we have the right and we have the obligation to go get them, right?
Right, exactly. And so the Taliban were part of that, those who harbor them and protect them and support them, et cetera. So, so now you're seeing really the Taliban separate from al-Qaeda, which has been lost somewhat in the discussion about Bergdahl. And I think the way Americans are understanding our enemies and the distinction that you're drawing and that I think is important is to what extent are the Taliban going to be a state actor going forward recognized by us. And it's a very important development in that regard. The further piece of that exchange you just had with the person who called in is just what is happening to the relationship between the United States and Pakistan? And people are starting to focus on it for the first time over this Bergdahl exchange and sort of the events of the past 24 hours at the airport. But it's going to be, I think, a major piece of what Americans are going to have to deal with in terms of foreign policy over the foreseeable future.
Peter in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Good morning, Peter. Peter hung up. All right, let's try Dave in Brooklyn. Hi, Dave. You're on WNYC.
Hey. First of all, I'm an Army veteran. Five guys are going to make a difference in all of this. And you don't think these guys are going to be followed and the Taliban is you know, going to know about it? And what would happen? What would be the fallout if there was a video of Berghoff being beheaded? What would that be like?
It's a great question. And what would John McCain say then about Barack Obama? In fact, there's now tape surfacing of various Republican members of Congress who didn't get a lot of publicity for it before because people you know, Bo Bergdahl was not on Americans' minds, but Republicans saying, we still have a prisoner of war there, and we're not bringing that American home. You're not being strong. Well, now we bring the American home in this swap, and the thing gets flipped on its head. But, Dave, let me turn it around on you for a second, hypothetically. If Bo Bergdahl was really a deserter, and I guess it's murky, but if he was really a deserter in the true sense of that word and was going over to the other side, would that absolve the Obama administration or any U.S. government of an obligation to try to bring him home, especially if it puts U.S. Lives at risk, you know, theoretically by releasing fighters from the other side? If he was really a deserter and really going to the other side,
then he has to face UCMJ. He has to face
military
justice.
Military
trial. Yep.
Uh-huh. But still, to be
in enemy hands,
he can't do that in enemy. Dave, thank you very much. Well, I think this brings us back to John Kerry, the Secretary of State, on CNN yesterday, basically saying what Dave said at the beginning of his call. This is Five Guys. There's a whole world of Taliban out there. We see what happened in Karachi yesterday without these Five Guys. These Five Guys are not going to make the difference. We have an obligation to bring all Americans home, and basically threatening to kill them if they cause any trouble. Listen.
To leave an American behind in the hands of people who would torture him, cut off his head, do any number of things, and we would consciously choose to do that? That's the other side of this equation. I don't think anybody would think that is the appropriate thing to do. And you know, it seems to me we have an ability, we know we have the ability, to be able to deal with people who want to threaten Americans or threaten the United States. And if that's what they go back on their word to do, or if the Qataris don't enforce what they've done, we have any number of avenues available to us to be able to deal with that.
Karen Greenberg, we have the ability, any number of avenues. Is that all euphemisms for we're going to drone strike these guys if they start to fight us actively again?
Yes, a drone strike or find some other way to take them out of the equation. Yes. And that's...
You okay with that?
I'm okay with the fact that the United States will do what it takes to make itself safe if it feel, you know, within the context of war. I'm not a big fan of drone strikes, but I do think that the whatever they say to get the American people to say we're watching things and we're going to do things legally and within the bounds of our authorities, that's what they're going to do.
And by the way, that wasn't good enough for John McCain, who was also on CNN yesterday.
The question is at what cost, whether it would put the lives of other American men and women who are serving in danger. And in my view, clearly, this would. And by the way, the president and John Kerry are confident that if these guys reenter the fight, one of them has already announced that he will reenter the fight. 30% of those who have been released from Guantanamo have reentered the fight, and we certainly haven't been able to kill all of them. So what we're doing here is reconstituting the Taliban government, the same guys that are mass murderers, one killed thousands of Shiite Muslims. These are the people that used to take women into the soccer stadium in Kabul and hang them from the goalpost.
John McCain. Karen Greenberg, just on the number that he used there, 30% of those released from Guantanamo, I guess he was referring to, have gone back to the fight. I saw another number in print that was 1 out of 6. But even 1 out of 6, that means there's a high risk that people released from Guantanamo on whatever premises are literally going back to trying to kill Americans, no?
Well, there's two things about that. One, we don't have any hard statistics about it. They range from large numbers to small numbers, and we don't know. The second thing is, what does it mean to go back to the fight? John McCain says, you know, he said he's already committed to it. He's going to go back right away. The answer by the American people has to be, so what? We will either rearrest them or, you know, re-detain them because we have hard evidence on something they've done, or they will be part of a battlefield operation, however we define it. But the answer can't be, and this has been true from the beginning of Guantanamo, saying they want to hurt us is not the same thing as having the capacity and being part of an organization. And we don't know anything about what will happen with these guys. And the idea that they're making it less, five people, as the military service person who was just online with you said, Is that really how we think of ourselves as a country? To be thinking that these five people are going to make all the difference, they're not, but it is going to make a huge difference in terms of the American stance in the world, the leadership of Obama, and the ability to empty Guantanamo, which is important.
Two more things real quick, and then we're out of time. One, it seems to me that advocates for closing Guantanamo have been making the case for years now that, oh, there's nobody of any value left at Guantanamo Bay. These are people who got caught in murky situations on the battlefield. They're hardly Osama bin Laden or Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or any of those guys. And now this prisoner swap takes place. The five come to light, and everybody, including the Taliban, acknowledges that they're high-level Taliban. So is really it's such a harmless group left at Gitmo that we should just kick them all out?
Well, it's not a question of that. It's a question of we should follow our rules of trial or release. That's sort of the line, which isn't that they're not dangerous. Some of them aren't dangerous or weren't dangerous, perhaps, when we picked them up, and others had the capacity or were in the past dangerous. And that question of who could be dangerous is a very slippery slope to go down. If we know so much about them, and I know that there are a lot of people who say, you just don't understand the legal constraints we're under. If we know so much about them, then let's try them.
And they still have to grapple with all of that in order to really clear Guantanamo. Because one of the other lines of commentary that I've seen a lot of that doesn't actually make any sense to me is, oh, Obama is using this as a way to get rid of people from Guantanamo without actually addressing that dilemma of either try them or free them because you're not going to try them. You can't prisoner swap your way to emptying Guantanamo Bay because Bo Bergdahl was the only American prisoner to trade people for.
Right. You can't and you don't want to. You don't want to have a situation where our prisoners are taken for that reason. And I disagree with John McCain. I don't think there's any indication that that will happen. But it's a problem that was set up early on in the war on terror. It's persisted to this day. And the longer it persists, the harder it seems to get out of. And I think what the president tried to do was take a giant leap over many of the incremental problems and do this very bold thing.
Swap.
Yeah, very bold swap that would bring this he knew exactly, had to know that this conversation was going to come. And we'll see what comes out on the other side of it.
The basic Gitmo dilemma unresolved after the Bo Bergdahl prisoner exchange. Karen Greenberg, director of the Center for Law and National Security at the Fordham University Law School. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, Rangel versus Espaillat from their first televised debate. That primary is in 2 weeks, if you haven't been paying attention. We will hear Rangel and Espaillat from their first televised debate. Stay with us.